Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
I was under the influence.
Hello, podcast listener. It is I, your usual co-host, stepping into the first chair tonight, Kevin Decent. Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub. I am joined by your usual hosts, and tonight sitting on the passenger side, Mr. Chris Lockhart. Chris, say hello.
I was going to do the Chewbacca growl, but I'm Chewbacca tonight. But yeah, my Chewbacca impression sucks.
I've tried, you know, it's one of those, maybe this will be a future topic or something. But it's one of those ones I can do better drunk.
Yeah, maybe. Or you just think you're doing it better.
You know, that's probably closer to it. Much like, oh, I can sing great when I'm drunk. No, you can't.
Yeah, like that episode of Family Guy where they were stoned. And they thought they were awesome. And then they played back the video and, yeah, they weren't that good.
True. I mean, I have plenty of friends like that, so makes sense.
Yeah.
But speaking of friends, speaking of being under an influence, that's a stretch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But tonight, we are going to talk about our geek influences. Now, Chris and I are both, you know, old enough now. We have families. We mm-hmm. pretend to be responsible adults.
Yep.
You know, at least as much as, you know, we can pull off. But someone, or many someones along the way, had to create that within us. You don't. We didn't just burst forth fully formed as the geeks that you know and listen to today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No. Somewhere along the way, someone made this happen. So, take a sip, take a seat at your house, or listen to this in the car. And hear the history of how Chris and I became the geeks that you know and love today, and who we have to thank for putting us on those journeys. Now, Chris, is there one you want to get going right away, or do you want me to go ahead?
Well, sure, I can kick it off, since I'm the co-host. So probably my biggest influence, I'll start with my biggest influence, is my mom. Now going back, as long as I can remember, my mom has always been a big supporter of my geek habits. I remember when I was a kid, like really young, my mom used to buy me comic books. And I mean, back when I was really young, you know, you could get them for 50 cents, 75 cents, right? So I think, you know, because my parents were young parents, you know, just starting out, you know, they didn't have a lot of money. I think it was like a cheap thing to get me, right? To keep me happy was to buy comic books. You know, when I was, you know, really young, I loved the pictures. And then eventually I began, you know, reading the words. And now that anyone who knows me knows that I'm a lifelong comic book fan. So, there was that. She used to let me stay up late to watch Star Wars on TV. Like, I remember back in the day when, you know, you could rent Star Wars, but you couldn't buy Star Wars. You know, like, it just wasn't readily available like it is now. It used to air, you know, like, I want to say at least every 6 months, they would show the trilogy on CTV. It would be, like, three different weekends, three different Sunday nights. They would have, you know, episode 4, 5, and 6. And I remember my mom letting me stay up late to watch those. And it was, of course, Sunday night, so it's a school day the next day, but she was nice enough to let me. The unfortunate thing, when I was younger, and now that I'm getting to be almost 40, my birthday's in 2 days at the time of this recording, so I'm getting up there. I'm a lightweight when it comes to staying up late. you know, except for the weeks I work, obviously. You know, like, there is the 1 week, like, I do shift work. So 1 week I'm working 6 in the morning till 6 at night. The next week I'm working 6 at night till 6 a.m. I'm forced to stay late or stay up late those weeks. But typically, you know, I'm in bed by like 10 or 11. Like, so like back then watching Star Wars, it would start at 9. I was lucky if I made it to like 10. And I was passed out on the couch or the chair or wherever I was, right? So for years, I never saw, you know, the end of Return of the Jedi. Like, that was the one I remember the most of not watching the end. And, you know, people used to tell me, oh, you know, about how Darth Vader was all, you know, spoilers, was all scarred and burnt and stuff. And I didn't see that for years. Like, it was crazy. The only reason I knew how it ended was because I used to have the storybook that my mom also bought me.
Oh, the giant hardcover.
Yes.
Red one.
Yep. 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 That's it. Yeah, with Luke and the green lightsaber in the cover.
Yep.
Yep. So she used to let me stay up late to watch Star Wars. She used to let me watch Star Trek. I don't remember this, but apparently she recorded The Wrath of Khan on videotape for me, and apparently I used to watch it like endlessly as a toddler. Like, I just loved it. You know, there was no Barney for me. Like, it was Star Trek. Well, Barney didn't exist back then, but we had our alternatives to Barney. But so there was that. She used to buy me most of my action figures as a kid. So I remember her buying me He-Man's, and then it was Captain Power, and then it was Ninja Turtles. But, yeah, there's so many different great geek things that she bought me over the years. Like, she bought me my first Star Trek Next Generation hardcover book. If you remember books and tapes, like back in the 80s, you could buy these. You could either get them on tape or records. She bought me the tape version, where you get them, and they're storybooks, and then you listen to the tape that goes along with it. So, I think, like, my collection had The Black Hole, it had, you know, the three Star Wars movies, it had, at the time, the three Star Trek movies. I want to say there was, like, Black Beauty in there, and there's a few others. Probably Herbie, The Love Bug. You know, different things like that, and you'd listen to the tapes. Of course, I always listen to the Star Trek and Star Wars ones. Those were my favorites. And The Black Hole. I love The Black Hole. But yeah, no, you know, even as a teenager, you know, like where I lived at the time, it's a little place. We lived on an acreage north of a place called Fort Assiniboine, which is about 20 minutes north of where I live now. But they didn't have comic books that were sold in that area. So whenever my mom went to town, which was Barrhead, I would ask her to pick up comic books for me. You know, and back then I was collecting The Incredible Hulk because Peter David was writing it at the time. So she kept me supplied with the Hulk monthly. And then, occasionally I'd ask her to pick up, you know, whatever, right? You know, and as far as comic books, and yeah, my mom's always been very supportive of my geek habits. She took me to my first Star Trek convention back in 92. Yeah, 92. Back when Creation used to, like, actually go to different cities and have, you know, just Star Trek conventions. Like, they weren't Comic Cons or anything like that. It was strictly Star Trek. So I met Counselor Troy, Worf, I met Major Kira, I met James Doohan, who played Scotty on the original Star Trek. So she took me to four different conventions over the course of, I want to say, 3 years. And, she took me there. And in 2011, she was the one that put me in the direction of the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo, because that was the year that William Shatner was there. And she read it online that he was coming. She knew, you know, of course, knows I'm a Star Trek fan, so she, you know, at the time she was working for a company here, so she called me to her work, so because she had all the information at work, and she showed me, and she got me, you know, set up with going to Calgary for the first time. So, yeah, my mom is probably my biggest geek influence. And the thing is, she's not really a geek herself in the sense that, you know, she's not a Star Trek fan. She doesn't mind it. And she always appreciated that, you know, Star Trek, well, not Star Trek Discovery, but back in the day, Star Trek and TNG and Deep Space Nine, they were positive shows. Like, you know, like, generally, you know, like, it wasn't kill, you know, death, you know, kind of like what's Discovery kind of is going. Like, they're going with a more modern, you know, kill, kill, death, death version of science fiction. You know, back when Star Trek was, you know, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man's gone before, she appreciated that message. And that's why she, you know, didn't mind me watching hours and hours and hours, you know, of Star Trek. And God bless her, because, yeah, I used to watch a lot of repeats. And this, and folks, like, this is before streaming. So, I mean, I used to record these shows on VHS, and then I would watch each episode probably 5 to 10 times before the next episode. Like, that's how dedicated I was. And if they were a particularly good episode, like Best of Both Worlds, I've probably seen that probably at least 50 times. And I would say that my mom, you know, by the fact that, you know, we only had the one TV and the one VCR and the one living room, she herself has probably watched Best of Both Worlds at least 15 times. Just because she was sitting in the room reading a book or something, right? So, you know, God bless her. Despite not being, you know, using air quotes, a geek herself, you know, she really, I wouldn't be the geek I am without her. So my mom is my biggest geek influence.
You know, I was going with more direct in the examples I was going to use. And your mom was certainly direct, but it made me realize how much of an indirect effect my mom had. Hmm. And encouraging, situational, you know, I mean, why certain choices were made, mm-hmm, was not, let me promote his geekness, or let me take, because my mom's not a geek by any means. But, for example, we had, between my brother and I, hundreds of G.I. Joe things. Without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Much more so than, you know, He-Man was probably second, if I had to guess, for quantity, mm-hmm, of toys. A handful of Transformers showed up. I really think they were more like a trade or garage sale thing. I didn't have a Thundercat until I was in my 30s. I loved it, but for some reason it's never happened. You know, when I go through stuff that's in storage or in my childhood bedroom, I'm like, oh yeah, I have these toys, like a, you know, mask or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But she loved G.I. Joe because, in her mind, it took more imagination to play with G.I. Joes. But it was more open imagination. He-Man is an Eternian, and he fights Skeletor, and that's kind of it. Mm-hmm. But G.I. Joe could be like, oh, we can grab this team and have this adventure and go over here, and then we can have this adventure on the opposite side of the world with a different team and do this. And she saw my brother and I being more creative with them than anything else. So she would encourage it more, which meant watching the cartoons. The Marvel Comics had commercials at the time, which commercials for comics is just, mm-hmm, astounding to think of, but there was a time when we did. So then we would buy the comics too. There are quite a few G.I. Joes that, if I was able to dig through them right now, have rust on the back where the screws are because they got lost in a snowbank all winter long, because those were the G.I. Joe winter missions, of course.
Yep.
So we took all of our winter-type figures and would redo it, and eventually someone's getting lost because there's an avalanche. You find them in spring.
So in your narrative, like... when they got lost and you found them in the spring, were they like prisoners of Cobra that whole time? Like in your, you know, when you were telling the story to yourself, or did they just come back?
You know, I think it was just like, hey, look who's back. Cause, for the cartoons, it would be like, oh, hey, what is it? Shipwreck and Snake Eyes showed back up. Yay. Mm-hmm. Well, guys, we no time to sit here and chit chat. We need to get back on our mission. Okay, let's go.
Yeah.
So they just kind of, you know, they didn't say, oh, where have you been?
No, that
it just rolled into the next adventure.
Well, that's awesome. No, I just, like, when I used to play with the action figures, I used to have, like, stories and stuff, like, in my mind's eye, right? And everyone, like, for me, it wasn't snow, but, like, event, you know, sometimes you'd lose an action figure in a couch. And then it would be uncovered, you know, months later when your mom, you know, vacuums out the couch and she, you know, oh, here, oh, wow, you know, I've been looking for that forever.
Keep going.
Oh, I was just going to say, I, you know, on a quick tangent, my, you know, to add to my mom and the geek influence, just a few years ago, she was at a garage sale and she dropped off these He-Man action figures that she found at the garage sale for me because she knows that I love He-Man. And then, like, that became a thing for a while. When I went to conventions, I would buy old He-Man action figures. It kind of rejuvenated my need to, you know, build my collection again. So even, you know, and I mean, I was in my 30s at that point. So even in my 30s, my mom's still influencing me as a geek.
Oh, absolutely. And to go back to the couch thing a moment before I continue, as you're bringing it up, if a G.I. Joe got lost in the couch we had as kids was actually a sleep bed couch. I know there's a proper name for it, but I can't think of it right now. Hide a bed.
Yep.
But there was a way you could arrange it that the bed would be out, but it would still, like, but you can put the cushions back on.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother and I would hide in there because then you could actually go inside the shell of the couch.
Ah.
And that was a cave for the toys.
Nice.
You know, much, as we are much smaller children, of course.
Yeah.
Not a chance I could fit in there now.
Yeah, I used to go.
That would be the cave for them.
I used to go underneath the kitchen table. And that was the sewers of New York for my Ninja Turtles. Being under the kitchen table.
That's a good one.
Yeah. But anyway, I went off tangent town there for it, Anya.
No. But so she loved the G.I. Joes. And I also think there was, movie rentals were cheap and everywhere. Mm-hmm. Every corner had a mom and pop shop, and every grocery store had a little corner. And it was always, okay, I have to grocery shop. You two need to behave, because there's nothing a kid loves doing more than, you know, walking next to a cart while mom or dad takes, you know, an hour or so to grocery shop. So it was, if you're good, then you can each rent a movie at the video rental counter that's in the front of the store by the checkout anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So of course we're gonna, sometimes we would even say, can we just go there now? And that while you're shopping, we'll spend the whole time looking at all the tapes. And then by the time you're done, we'll know what we want to get. And she's like, well, that saves me time. So yeah, go ahead. But also, I feel like I may have not always gotten the toy I wanted. I may have not deserved it many times, you know, being a snot-nosed kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe she ever said no to a book.
That's cool.
And would steer me towards it. Toys R Us used to have packages of comics, and it'd be like 50 comics in this plastic shell, and all you're going to see is the one on the front. So the 49 rest are a mystery. Hmm. It was like $10, maybe. Oh, they were so much. Obviously, some closeout place, you know, would sell them to it. But those were loads of fun. She bought me, we discussed before, the comic packs out of the Penny's or Sears catalogs.
Yep.
With the cardboard boxes. So I got those. If I was sick home from, and, you know, like sick with the flu, I'm out of school for a week, comics would magically appear if she was out, you know, grocery shopping for like ginger ale and chicken noodle soup. But she also, like you were saying with the garage sales, My mom would also tell me anytime, like, hey, I don't think you noticed this event or this thing or whatever going on. You might want to go.
Yep.
I think I was like 18, 19, maybe 20 at the oldest. And for years previously, probably like near 10 years previously, she'd say, I'm going to a library book sale. Do you want to go? No, I don't want to go. Because I'm thinking the library book sale is all of the, you know, old lady stuff at libraries, honestly, yep. What I had in mind.
Romance novels.
And, you know, the readers, yeah, the readers that are just condensed books, the crafting stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to go. So then she said, hey, you know, so whatever age range I was for this, she says, hey, it's going on. Do you want to go? No, I don't want to go. And then she said, well, I was thinking of going down, and then I was going to do this, and then I was going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, all right, well, if I go, I'm getting a free lunch out of this. Because she wanted to try some new place.
Yeah.
Like, and then the comic store is over there. So, you know what? Yeah, I'll go to the sale just so I have an excuse to go out to eat and go to the comic store, too.
Yeah.
So I woke up, I was ready to go, and something came up, and she said, I'll meet you there. So, all right, that's fine. So an hour later, she loves telling the story. An hour later, she walks into the library and she walks by one of the like side rooms, little conference room or something, and sees me in there and she turns her head. I have four boxes of books going. And she says, what are you doing? I go, these are all the books I found that I want and I don't have enough money. So I'm sure, because it was cash only.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out what I can live without here. And this was at, like, a quarter a book. I think I blew, like, $40 the first time I went.
Wow.
I just went nuts. But she laughed. She thought it was so much fun. But she, like, still to this day, anytime something like that's going on, oh, hey, there's a new consignment store, and they have toys and comics and books there. And, okay, yes, next time I'm in town, I want to go.
Yeah.
Still, so she steered me to find all this stuff. And some of it was taking away the any sort of stigma of going to those stores. I mean, we both know people, I'm sure, that won't go to like a thrift store or a garage sale or, you know, a library sale like that because, like, oh, it's dirty. Yep. Oh, that's what poor people do or something like that.
I know,
which is absurd. But
I know people
that
won't go to a dollar store, even though it's all brand new stuff. They won't go.
How many times have I posted look at the cool DVDs I found at the dollar store?
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, people won't, but she was always like, oh, hey, there's a new this, and they have a bunch of things I think you would like.
Yeah.
I never felt bad going to any of those places, and then I never felt anything wrong about donating to them, too.
Yep.
That's just the way it works. You know, but yeah, I was going with more direct ones. I hadn't even thought of how much mom does, and because there's a chance he'll listen. I'll say my dad had some as well, but because my parents were divorced since I was a little kid, a lot of it is like, oh, hey, it's weird. I knew who Doctor Who was, but I didn't watch it. Well, it's because my dad had it on once, but the theme song is stuck in my head, you know, something like that. But the funny thing is he didn't do comics. Like, I mean, probably when he was a little kid, he did. But he didn't understand comics. He didn't understand me not being into sports, anything like that. But since the Marvel movies have started, I'll get a phone call. Like, the weekend the new Marvel movie's out, I'll get a phone call. Okay, I just saw I need help with some details. Please explain it to me.
Yeah.
And he found the local comic store where he lived and went in and wanted some help and explanation and all. So it's been funny how, you know, this is now me influencing him with it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay, do you have another one in here?
All right. I guess we should have clarified this before. You're talking like more famous people that are influencing, right?
No, not at all. I can do another one if you want.
Sure.
Just to get an idea. Okay. So, go ahead. Or is that just a little hiccup?
Nope, you go ahead, yeah.
All right, so, As I said, my parents were divorced. My mom worked. My brother and I went to the same babysitter. Okay. And she had a son who was 3 or 4 years older than me. And my brother's 2 years younger than me. So we were all close to the same range. But at that age, that's also a big difference too. But the funny thing was, he was old enough to have things we didn't have. Like, he was old enough that he had Star Wars before we did.
Okay.
Because, you know, I was born in 78, so he was probably born in, like, 75. So he was old enough to probably, you know, see Empire when it was new, and Jedi when it was new, and not discover it on TV.
Yep.
And so we had all the toys. And then when my brother and I were getting into it, it was like, oh, we need to all play Star Wars together. So he actually took, it probably takes him off to this day, but he took red nail polish to the feet of his. So when all of our Star Wars played together, he would know which ones were his then. So then we could separate them back out.
Nice.
But he ended up acting like an older brother with a lot of this. Because he'd say, oh, hey, I'm home from school. You guys are here being babysat. Check out this new cartoon. So that's when we would watch, like, He-Man and Thundercats and G.I. Joe and all that. Discovering, like, Saturday syndication stuff. So we watched some wrestling. American Gladiators was huge. You know, just anything. And then they had HBO, so he's like, oh, you gotta see this movie. We taped it off TV. You gotta see this, you gotta see that. Because he was older, he was seen as, he could be responsible for us, too.
Yeah.
So he would take us trips downtown, and all of us would go to the comic store. All of us would go, you know, to the bookstore downtown. Stuff like that. And we all ended up getting into the same series. We, all three of us were trying to, between the three of us, come up with one complete collection of West Coast Avengers at the time. And, I mean, that comic lasted issue 100, but I think when we started, it was only in, like, the 30s. So it wasn't that tough, but it was that tough because we couldn't find them. So there's only, like, one or two stores in town.
Yeah.
But then he would go somewhere else. He'd be, like, visiting family. And he'd come home and be like, look at all these comics I got. And bring them down. And we'd all have, like, this little reading party and, you know, play with our toys together and everything. So it was like having an older brother in a way, showing, like, this stuff is cool. This is okay. You could be into it.
Yeah.
So in a time when I didn't have anyone else, I was the only person who read comics at school. I was the biggest nerd at school. I didn't have a peer. Really until high school, certainly not in grade school, that I had that with. It was just nice to be like, well, he's older and he's into this stuff and he has friends and is cool at school now, so it's okay for me to do it too. It's okay for me to like this stuff and not be into sports because it doesn't matter. Just because my classmates kind of suck doesn't mean everyone's stuff.
Well, that's right on.
The funny thing is, the two of us, through Facebook and all, we'll still talk. So anytime there's a former member of the West Coast Avengers that gets mentioned for movie, TV, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there's that U.S. agent picture.
Yep.
From Falcon Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger was supposed to have a Hulu show. I guess that got canceled this week.
Oh.
Moon Knight is supposed to be coming to Hulu, I think, but I can't remember. It's getting confusing again. He'll message me right away, like, oh my god, oh my god, I can't believe this is happening. The moment Hawkeye showed up, I could, all, like, he Facebook messaged me, I swear I could hear it out my window. He was just like, could you ever believe when we were kids we'd see Hawkeye in a movie? I'm like, not a chance. I didn't think we'd see any of this. It was just great to have, you know, that positive, slightly older influence.
Okay, so I'm going to go with someone a little bit famous here. Like, I have a bunch of names I want to drop, but I'm thinking more of a lightning round for that one. But for this one, I'm going to go with Kevin Smith. The reason why he's a big geek influence on me the main reason being, his films, you know, his characters were having, you know, these in-depth discussions about geek culture that just weren't happening yet in you know, media. You know, like in the first Clerks movie, you know, when they're talking about you know, the Death Star on Return of the Jedi, you know, and all the independent contractors that would have been working on the Death Star, and that, you know, the Empire was actually, you know, the legitimate government, and that these rebels came in and destroyed it and killed all these independent contractors. Like, you know, this whole discussion that I didn't even think of that being a thing, right? But it makes sense, and these are the type of discussions that me and my friends would have, right? You know, not that particular discussion, but similar ones, where we would, you know, think about something in pop culture and try and analyze and break it down. So this was the first time I'd seen it on film. And now, you know, he's been such a big influence on me, like, you know, with, you know, he's one of the pioneers in podcasting. You know, I don't really listen to his podcasts anymore just because I don't really listen to a lot of podcasts. I've had to trim down my podcast listening, but occasionally I do listen to them when I can. He's a great podcaster. I really enjoy it. I still love his movies. I still love all the pop culture references. I'm really looking forward to the Jay and Silent Bob reboot. I hear a lot of good things about it. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, like, he's just kind of like, he's a positive influence on my life in that, you know, he was just a regular dude that, you know, that came from, you know, a small town, and became famous. You know, he really built himself. He built a career on doing the things he liked, and he just added to it as he went. You know, like, he was a comic book fan, and then he eventually became a comic book writer. He was a fan of animation and stuff, and now he has a hand in the new He-Man cartoon that's going to be coming out. He is a to me a big geek influence. He's one of those guys I would love to meet. Like, he came to Calgary a few years ago. Unfortunately, I didn't get the chance to meet him. I couldn't go that year. I can't remember. I think that might have been the year we went on our cruise to Alaska. So, yeah, like, I had to miss a few years because we went on a cruise, and then one year we went down to Disneyland, and I just couldn't afford it, right? And that was, unfortunately, one of the years I couldn't afford it. But, yeah, fingers crossed, I'm hoping. Like, I know he's coming to Edmonton. Oh, or maybe he already came. He might have already came, actually, now that I think about it. But I had to miss him again because I was working. But yeah, I'd love for a chance to meet him. He would be one of the, you know, like, they ask if you could meet a celebrity or spend a, you know, go to dinner with a celebrity or whatever. He'd be one of them for me. I'd love to just sit, spend an afternoon with the guy, talking to him, getting his thoughts on things, and learning more about his projects that he's working on. Cause he's one of them guys that's always up to something. Like, whether it's a podcast or he's doing a live performance, or, you know, he's making a movie, or he's, you know, like I said, working on the He-Man cartoon, or he's, you know, helping with a comic book, you know, he's got his, Comic Book Men TV show. As far as I know, that's still on the air. I haven't heard anything if it's been canceled.
No. There's actually a long story in one of his podcasts about it, but they were trying to go for 100 episodes because that's guaranteed syndication.
Yeah.
And it got canceled at 96.
Oh, no way. Oh, I didn't realize it was canceled.
Yeah, which actually, the first season's all 1 hour ones. Just split those into half hours and you get your 100.
Yeah. Yeah. And I loved them when they were an hour long. Like, I'd watch, like, I loved them. But yeah, it's unfortunate. Like, I know in Canada, you can stream it on Amazon Prime. So I've been meaning to get back and watch that. But yeah, I don't, like, honestly, I was totally out of the loop because I don't really watch AMC for anything anymore. Like the final season of Better Call Saul's coming out, and I'll be watching that, but I think I don't even remember the last thing I watched on AMC, to be honest with you, because I don't watch The Walking Dead anymore. I gave up on that show. So yeah, I totally missed that. Yeah, that got canceled. That sucks. But anyway, Kevin Smith, that is the next on my list.
You know, I couldn't agree with that pick more. I we'll be talking about this in our always popular Ender segment later on in the show. But I have a group chat with two of my very close friends. Usually it's about wrestling or some sort of ridiculousness. But if there's anything big enough, we'll talk about that too. And one of them wrote and said, I can't think of a celebrity if they died would upset me. Like I would cry as if I knew them. And he said to me, he goes, I know you have Kevin Smith and I know that would do it for you, but I don't have that. And I was thinking, you're damn right. That would do it for me.
Yep.
Like when he had his heart attack last year,
that was scary.
Maybe over a year now. Oh my gosh. I had people coming up to me at work. Like, did you hear him? Like I heard apparently he's okay. Like we were all freaking out together, which was kind of nice.
I want to say that was 2 years ago. I think it was at
this point. Because I finally watched the stand-up special he was filming the night it happened.
Yep.
Yeah. And it took them a while to release that to make sure he was all right.
Yeah, because what did he call it? It had something to do...
Silent but Deadly.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Which works on so many levels for him.
But yeah, that was a great great special.
And I would say for Kevin Smith, it wasn't just the influence on being a geek, because there certainly is that. There's, hey, it's okay to talk about comics and pop culture like other people talk politics or sports. Like it's okay for this to be our banter, for this to be our shared collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did his comics and they were great when he finished them. He opened up the whole world of podcasting to so many people. I remember first telling people about podcasts and they're like, what is it? I was like, well, it's like, and I finally gave up. I'm like, it's radio on the internet that you can have at any time. Like, well, and people couldn't wrap their minds around it. And here he is already, like, has, you know, five shows and hundreds of episodes before people are even understanding the concept.
Yep.
Of it. But I'd also say, as a geek influence, one of the other things he did was, hey, I'm a person in this world. I'm 20, I'm 30, I'm 40. I'm confused about something, I have feelings about something, and I need a way to get those feelings out so I know how to deal with them and how to comprehend them in his movies. And for anyone within that same generation age range, I think he spoke to a lot of the same feelings and emotions that we didn't know we had or how to get out, and thought, oh my gosh, that's how I'm feeling too. Clerks and Mallrats for just that... that I feel I'm too smart to be here in retail mentality. Chasing Amy for, hey, I'm dating someone with a history and I don't know how to deal with that because I don't have one. Dogma dealing with religion. I thought Clerks, if Clerks 2 ended and that was it, he just, you know, walked away from movies entirely and turned off the lights, I would have been okay with it. I thought there was a perfect ending to what he created.
Which I think at the time was his intention.
Oh, it was. Yeah. And I was satisfied. I'm like,
yep.
Good.
Yep.
There's a closed chapter. And if that's it, I am happy. But I'm also happy that, and I haven't seen Jay and Silent Bob reboot either, but I'm very curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
He's working on Twilight of the Mallrats right now, finally.
Yep.
Which, if that's him addressing retail apocalypse and dead malls, I'm so in. I mean, I'm in no matter what, but
yep.
I'm very curious what he'd have to say about all that. And even to the places he went with his little horror trilogy there, it wasn't that he was answering the same questions or anything, but it was more, hey, in our 20s and 30s, we created this for other people. Well, what if I want to create something for myself? What if now that you're in your late 30s, early 40s, you got a little bit of money to play with, what would you want to make? And honestly, you could say Kevin Smith influencing us to go ahead and try to do something on your own, a story that only you can tell, mm-hmm. is him being influenced by Stan Lee creating Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. When Joni says, well, Stan, if you're going to quit, why don't you do one the way you want to do it?
Yep.
And there's Spider-Man Fantastic Four in the next year. And the world changed, you know?
Yep. Well, and just to add to the Kevin Smith thing, one of the things I really appreciate about Kevin is the fact that he's willing to speak out. Like, for example, you know, before all this Harvey Weinstein stuff happened, like where the women, the Me Too movement, women were coming forward, he was one of the first celebrities to speak out against Harvey Weinstein. Not for that, but for him just being an asshole.
For him stealing money from him for years?
Yeah. Stealing money. And I forget which, I think it was Red State. Like, he went to the premiere and Harvey Weinstein was talking on the phone all the time and being loud. And Kev, because Harvey Weinstein was the guy who broke him into movies, right? Like, he was the one that gave him the chance. He owned Miramax.
He bought Clerks up to distribute.
Yep.
And then they did, his next two through them.
Yeah.
Or three.
And he, you know, like he said, like, you know, Harvey was my hero. He was, you know, he was the guy that believed in me. And then he was just being an asshole. And he basically said, like, get the fuck out of my movie. You know? And I think like in his book, like this, I mean, his book came out a few years ago now, like I want to say 2013, somewhere around there. So I don't know if they ever repaired that relationship. I haven't heard anything. But I know,
no, like, especially not now.
Yeah, he basically told him to get the fuck out, and he never talked to him. Like, I mean, he stood up to the guy, Bruce Willis. You know, like, there's all these rumors you hear about him being an asshole and, you know, being kind of out there, and Kevin Smith was the first one to like call him out on it. You know, for being an asshole and you know, really thinking too highly of himself, right? And he was called out Prince for being as weird as we thought he was. Like, you know, he's not looking to burn bridges, but he's not willing to stand by and take people's shit either. Like, he will speak out. And I appreciate that about Kevin Smith. That, because a lot of celebrities don't. Like, I mean, now they are, like with this whole Me Too movement and stuff. They are. And I mean, it's good that it's finally happening, but. You know, he was one of the first ones to do that, you know, speak out against assholes.
Well, true. And also showing us, like, there's nothing wrong with getting new information and changing your mind. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing wrong with it. One of his podcasts, he addressed the whole Harvey Weinstein thing when everything hit. And he said, look, I was just a dude that wanted to make some movies. I didn't know this was going on. He didn't do anything to me because he wasn't interested in me.
Yep.
I didn't know. And I'm going to be second guessing everything now to wonder, did I miss something? Did I not see something? Could I have helped? Could I have stopped something? He's like, I'm going to be second guessing it. But I didn't know. And he was just brutally honest about it. Like, yep. I feel bad and I have nothing to feel bad about, but I do. And I'm sorry for all the stuff I said beforehand because those words are out there, you know, his stand-up specials or his interviews or his books or whatever, those words are out there, and that's how I felt at the time based on the knowledge I had at the time.
Yep.
And no, I would not think that way now, knowing what I know.
Yep.
And so many people seem unwilling to accept new information and change their opinion.
Well,
which Kevin Smith even addresses in Dogma.
Well, and to be honest with you,
an opinion.
We're kind of in the same boat in a lot of ways. I mean, it's like Michael Jackson, you know, like that special that came out, you know. It's hard, you know, like, I mean, he was an icon and he was someone that we all looked up to and we appreciate his music and all that. But, you know, it's hard, you know, especially when you don't have all the facts, right? Like, you know, I know Weinstein's a little different. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, like, I don't know. It was kind of known, and it wasn't totally unexpected. Like, I don't know anything about Weinstein, like, other than the name. But, I mean, it's a running gag for years that, you know, they called that the casting couch, right? It wasn't just Weinstein. There was a lot of other people taking advantage of young actresses.
Oh, and I mean, depending, like, I fell down a rabbit hole twice in the last month of, hey, if this one thing is true about, you know, some Hollywood scandal, then this, and this fall into place a little too easily. I'm like, oh, I gotta stop reading.
Yeah.
Because I'll never know if it's true or not. No one's ever gonna come out and say if it's true or not. I'm just gonna, you know, it's gonna ruin certain movies, shows, whatever, if it is true, and I don't know. It's like, I just need to stop with it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for... to tie into the influences in a way, like, these people, the ones we mentioned are all, you know, very good and clean, but we could mention someone else that may have influenced us, that may have gotten ball rolling,
mm-hmm.
and if it turns out there's something negative about them, we can still, you know, have that negative and not support them and condemn them for that,
mm-hmm.
but also still say, yes, but there's also this other part here that was a good memory or did guide me somewhere or did influence me in a positive way.
Yep.
Both things can come out of the same person.
Yep.
I can appreciate that Harvey Weinstein's money got Kevin Smith going and still think he's a terrible person for everything he did to these actresses.
Yep.
I can believe both things there.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, yeah, it's like Michael Jackson. I mean, he did a lot of good things, too. Like, he helped a lot of people. But, you know, it turns out he might have been a monster at the same time.
Yeah, and I mean, certain ones, like, I was never a big R. Kelly fan. He does not have an influence in my world. So him getting, you know, shut down, canceled, as the kids call it now.
Yep.
Doesn't affect me. But Michael Jackson, with this strong possibility of being a horrible person, how am I going to escape 30 of the greatest pop songs ever made?
Mm-hmm.
You know, number one or two album, depending on the week, of all time.
Yep.
Like, yeah, I just need to separate in a way. Yep. And I mean, it's kind of like, I can't think of a comic one off the top of my head. But let's say, I don't know, and this is just to pick a name at random. Let's say out of nowhere comes out tomorrow that, oh my gosh, Bob Kane killed someone. I'm just picking names at random here.
Yeah.
That doesn't take away everything Batman for the last 70, 80 years. Like, that's... You know, eventually you have to separate the art from the artist.
Yep.
And this is its own thing, and you can enjoy and all, and your enjoyment of it does not mean you're supporting any bad acts the person that created it did.
Yep.
And now, in a more immediate sense, sure, you know, there's certain writers, directors, whatever, that we've all heard stories about, and you say, okay, well, you're still alive, and I'm just not going to support what you've done,
mm-hmm.
that I'm aware of in the present while you are trying to work. I can shut that down now. But what would be the point in shutting down Michael Jackson right now, or you know, long-dead comic artists, like I'm making an example of? Like, what would gain from me shutting that down?
Yeah. Exactly.
So I have one other personal one here.
Okay.
And this goes from me spending way too much time at the comic shop when I was younger. So the local comic store was a mile mile and a half tops from my grade school. And then when I went to high school, it was still probably like 2 miles away from where I lived. So I would take my money, whether it was lunch money I didn't use or allowance or birthday or whatever, and I would go at least every Wednesday and probably every weekend too, just to hang out. And eventually the guy working there most of the time got to know me pretty well, know what I was interested in. And this being the height of the 80s going into the 90s in comics and speculator boom and Image and Chromium Graph, you know, all that junk.
Yep.
He would start steering me away from things because he'd say, you're smart and you enjoy this. So instead of buying, you know, new Image comic number one with a shiny cover, get this instead. Now, sometimes, and he got in trouble with this with the owner, he would say, I'll give you that shiny comic for free, but you're buying this good comic instead. Which is not a good way to run a business.
Yeah.
But when all of the McFarlane toys first came out, and there was a Spawn toy and a Violator toy and a Clown toy and everything, of course I wanted them. Of course I did. As a child of the 80s reading the extreme comics of the 90s. And I think the store got them in for like 10 or 15 bucks each. And I looked and I was like, well, I'm buying this today. He said, no, you're not. But no, I'm really excited. I want this toy. He's like, you do not want to buy this. You're too, no, this is garbage. Because tell you what, I'll give this to you today, pay for it later. I never did. It's sitting in a box in the closet right now. I know that thing's never been paid for. Instead, I'm going to take that $15 you're about to spend, and you're taking this home instead. And he handed me Watchmen.
Nice.
And then he said, when you're here next week, we're going to talk. So I came in and I sat under the learning tree. And then Dark Knight Returns showed up, Batman Year One showed up, stuff I was not ready for showed up, and then he said, well, let's go and hang out. So there, it turned out there was a group of people in the comic shop, and I was way younger, but they saw something in me, I guess. So I would go over and hang out, and that's when they said, oh, you need to be doing this instead. Here's Robert Crumb, here's Bob Dylan, here's John Lennon, you know, like the stuff that's so obvious, and we all know it now, but I didn't know it as a kid then, as a teenager.
Yeah.
I knew what MTV was telling me, you know? And he's like, no, that's awful.
Yeah.
You need to do this. Now, granted, they're probably a bunch of, like, you know, pot smoking philosophers in their age and time. But that's not what it was for me. They weren't pushing anything on me. They weren't, you know, doing anything illicit, illegal around me, as far as I can tell. It was literally just, we enjoy talking with you at the shops. We'd enjoy talking with you when we're all hanging out, too. And it was just constantly, here, I made you, you know, copies of this tape, borrow this, read this, bring it back to us, like book reports. And I think when it got to the point where I realized I have done none of my schoolwork because I'm too worried about this, that I had to cut it back.
Yeah.
Also, I think by the time he was no longer working at the comic shop, probably because people like me were getting stuff for free, ended up shutting down. But I think that influence comes into a lot of the stuff I do now. I love letting people know about things. I love, it's like, hey, here's this cool video, here's this cool song, here's this cool book, whatever. More people should know about it. Even if what I write or post or, you know, any or a podcast or anything gets one more person onto it, well, who knows how that one more person will be influenced.
Yep.
To go back to something we've talked about for years, and maybe it'll come up in your rapid fire, there's not a chance in hell until up to the day he died that Harlan Ellison realized me in Nowhere, New York, and you in Canada were both equally influenced by his words on a show 20 years earlier.
Yep.
There's no way you realize that. But there's two. So you know there's more around the world, like us.
Oh, yeah.
That were influenced by that. So, okay, I don't know who's reading or listening to anything I put out there, but there's a good chance someone is, and maybe that starts something else, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of thinking about it. All right. Well, on my list, I'm gonna combine a bunch of things into one because they all kind of fit under the same influencer, and that's print and television. And this is a mini rapid fire. Entertainment Weekly. I used to have a subscription to Entertainment Weekly for years.
Man, I didn't think of that. Good call.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of times they would, you know, like, you could tell, like, they didn't want to include comics and stuff for the longest time, but then, you know, they would slide it in there a little bit towards the back, and eventually, you know, it became more mainstream as the comic book movies became more profitable, and
There's a Jim Lee X-Men article I think I got in my files somewhere.
Yep.
From Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah, so Entertainment Weekly, Wizard Magazine, that's another great one.
Oh, God, yeah.
And TV Guide, like, you know, the old... You
old
know,
school TV Guide.
Yeah, the old, you know, paper.
Not the current one.
Like, I you know, because they would, you know, have articles in the front and the back. And, you know, I still remember, like, the issues, like, where they did the, you know, interview with Patrick Stewart. They did an interview with Avery Brooks. You know, they did, like, I was trying to look for it in my office. I can't find it. They did, like, a special... when the Next Generation went off the air, they did like this little, you know, with the paper stock cover and, you know, a lot of articles about, Star Trek Next Generation. And of course, yeah, like I said, Wizard, like there was so many articles on there. That's when, you know, I really met my, comic book writers and artists. Like they would put faces to the names, they would interview yep. them,
the top 10 list of the month mm-hmm. for writers and artists
yep.
with the little pictures. Yep.
And I remember even years later, like when I remember 2012, I met Peter David at the Calgary convention, and I brought up, because I remember Wizard did a story about he was going to be doing a Hulk special called Past Imperfect, which was the sequel to Future Imperfect, where because in the Hulk book he brought the Maestro back, resurrected him, but then of course his run got canceled at issue 467, and he intended to go to issue 500, which I found out in 2012 when I was talking to him about it. And I because they never did do that Past Imperfect story, and I asked him about it, and he kind of forgot about it, like that he was even going to do that. But I remember reading it in Wizard, and I remember because Wizard was the first, like that's where I found out that Peter was getting moved off the title because they wanted to go back to the Savage Hulk, right? Like for whatever reason, Marvel Comics and their infinite wisdom. You know, basically told their writer of their one of their top books, hey, we want you to start telling stories about the Savage Hulk. You know, we want to go back to, you know, to that. And he was like, no, that's not the story I'm telling. I got my own, you know, and he left the book. So, and it's funny, years later, he completely forgot about it. He's like, oh, yeah, you're right. I was going to do that. Because that was one of the things that they announced in that article, was that Peter wasn't quite done with the Hulk, that there would be Past Imperfect, and it never really... I think they ended up doing a Past Imperfect, but it was like a Greg Pak book, I want to say. And I don't think it even had anything to do with the Maestro. I think it was just a story about the Hulk in the past. But anyway, I digress. But yeah, so I mean, those print books were big influence on me. And now for the TV, Entertainment Tonight, I still watch it occasionally. And we have a Canadian version called Entertainment Tonight Canada, which, one of the former co-hosts of Sci-Fi Buzz, one of the former co-hosts of, Innerspace. It's like basically the Canadian version of Sci-Fi Buzz. She's on there now, Morgan. And she tends to cover like the geeky stuff. Like, you know, she'll go to San Diego Comic-Con and stuff for Entertainment Tonight Canada, which is, you know, pretty cool. And then, of course, as you mentioned with Harlan Ellison, Sci-Fi Buzz. I love that show. Of course, the episodes when Harlan did his commentary, those were the ones I really liked. Whenever you seen Harlan in the opening credits, you knew it was going to be a good episode. But yeah, they did a lot of great stories, a lot of interviews and so on and so forth. And for, I want to say 1 year, Sci-Fi Channel, in conjunction with the Canadian television channel YTV, did a series called The Anti-Gravity Room, which was like a comic book version of Sci-Fi Buzz, essentially. Like, it had yeah. three hosts, PJ Phil from YTV, and they had Nick Sklar. He was like a 14-year-old kid from New York, I want to say. And then they had Shashi. She was like an aspiring actress. She was actually in an episode of Seinfeld back in the day. And yeah, like they would interview the greats of comic books, you know, at the time. And yeah, like, the, I mean, I think I recorded every episode on tape and watched them a bunch of times. And same with Sci-Fi Buzz, you know, like, so those TV shows, those print media, those were big geek influences on me growing up. Because, I mean, back then, we didn't have internet. Not like we have it today, kids. Like, back in the day, they used to have something called dial-up, and it was terrible. It took forever. And especially where I lived, because I lived, like pretty much in the boonies. Like, we're, you know, like, a really low-tech area where I grew up in. So when we got the internet, I think I was in like grade 10 when our school finally got one computer that had internet on it. So yeah, I think the only website I ever went to in high school was one called, I think it was called The Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5. And it was like a Babylon 5 fan website where J. Michael Straczynski, the creator of Babylon 5, would go to and answer questions and so on and so forth. And he would, you know, give them, you know, some still images from upcoming episodes that they would post and so on and so forth. But that was like my first taste of what the internet could do. It wasn't until I got out into the real world, I want to say my mid-20s. Like, that was the first time I actually started... You know, I got my first computer at my own house and started actually going online. And unfortunately, as a result of me and many people like me getting access to the internet and to websites, you know, things like Wizard Magazine, TV Guide, that all that kind of stuff kind of went by the wayside. And even Entertainment Weekly, I believe, is turning into like a monthly magazine now instead of weekly.
Yeah, but keeping the name Weekly for reasons, I guess.
It's an institution. It's like Time Magazine. You know, if Time Magazine became some Time Magazine, like it just wouldn't be the same, right? It's sad. It's sad that print media is going the way it is, and I'm partially to blame myself. Like I don't go to the comic book store anymore. I buy all my comics digitally now at this point. My trades I buy from Amazon typically, because they're way cheaper than actually going to a bookstore or a comic book store. And I feel terrible. I feel terrible, but at the same time, why would I pay double for something, right? But it just contributes to the culture of, you know, now we're getting away from brick and mortar stores, right? Like, everything's going online. But anyway, I digress. I'm going to Tangent Town again. But yeah, that was my next on my list, those medias.
You know, all right, two thoughts here. One, when you're talking about like the stuff we'd go out and buy, mm-hmm. how about an influence that was the magazine rack at stores, at department stores or grocery stores when we were younger?
Oh, yeah.
There's actually a fully stocked one with a comic spinner and a variety of magazines on spinners. Many topics.
Oh, I miss the spinners. I love the spinners.
But how many comics did you get because it looked cool in the spinner that you never would have gotten otherwise, mm-hmm. or even known about or seen?
Yeah,
exactly. I know exactly what store I was at and where their magazines were located when I see certain comic covers.
Mm-hmm.
There's some amazing Spider-Man comics that I'm like, oh, that was at A&P, and their spinner rack and magazines were over by the deli department.
Yep.
It's been 35 years nearly. Why should I remember that?
Yep.
You know, it was such an influence. And then there were music magazines, and we started getting comic magazines like Wizard, you said, or Comic Scene,
mm-hmm.
which was a great one for showing like the history of it, and then
yep.
what's new in movies, TV, whatever. Like you said, TV Guide mattered at one point.
Oh, I should have mentioned Starlog. Starlog was amazing. That was a big influence around me.
Starlog was huge, and there was something before it, like Stardust or Star something else I've seen.
In the 90s, there was also Cinescape. That was like a big one too. I want to say like around the time when Star Trek Generations came out, that's when I remember buying Cinescape.
But I mean, like, it's just funny how much that did for us. Not just in the great covers, not just in the actual articles, but also the advertising too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, advertising works. There's so much stuff that I got because there was a pretty thing, you know, pretty ad for it in a magazine.
Yep.
And sometimes it was, oh, hey, I need to come back here next week because it sounds like the issue of the comic or this magazine or this whatever is kind of be here. And it works, and we're spending money. But to also, for speaking of spending money, a great influence, like, you know, I've talked about going to comic store, and you talk about places you went to buy stuff. But now, yes, so much of what we do is online.
Mm-hmm.
But to make an example, and perfect one here for the Pop Culture Pub, beer is much cheaper to go to the grocery store and get yourself a 12-pack and bring it home than to drink it at a bar.
Yes.
Much cheaper to do that. But people go to the bar and spend more for the camaraderie, the conversation, the sport going on, whatever yep. it might be that's happening. I went to the comic store today. Iron Man 3 was playing on the TV in that. Big screen TV.
Yep.
The guy running the store for, you know, the time window that I went in there talked to me about my blog and certain posts I had done. I heard another conversation about some Silver Age books. Got my stuff, a couple other things, and left. I'm like, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great conversation that I just popped in here for that I wasn't going to get online. I could have gotten all these books online easily.
Yeah.
Easily. But I didn't want to because I like going in there. I've had other ones. We all have where I'm like, I would rather go anywhere than your shop right now. It's the only option I have. You know, pre-internet.
Yeah.
Where we went to crappy places. But I mean, like, yes, there's our podcast, there's our blogs and things, but it's tougher online. Like, you're not gonna have someone say, hey, you like that, you would also like this on Amazon in the same way you will in person.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
I feel like, you know, our kids or whatever are not gonna discover things to the same level that we did, maybe.
Yeah. And it's sad. It really is. Even like streaming, you know, like it's, you know, like watching the Saturday morning, you know, for example, watching the Saturday morning cartoon block, you know, you'd be introduced to new cartoons, and you might, you know, you might not have normally checked it out, but because it was on the, you know, like on the Saturday morning cartoons, you did, and you ended up liking it and ended up watching it. Whereas streaming doesn't really do that. I mean, there's recommendations like Netflix and different apps will make, but it's not the same as you know, watching it live, right?
No, because there's not going to be, oh, hey, here's a cool Saturday morning cartoon at 9, there's a cool one at 10, but 9:30, I don't know what I'm going to watch, and stumble across something cool.
Yeah.
That exactly. Also becomes a favorite now. Yeah, no, it's just not good. Even if it's a commercial for, like, hey, coming up later, we got this. Like, yeah, there's commercials on, you know, YouTube and Hulu and, you mm-hmm. know, certain other apps. Netflix has commercials for their own stuff. But I do wonder, you know, how, like, the next generation's going to discover cool things. No one is going to say, hey, I was up in the attic and I found my dad's old MP3s. Like, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
But I know I found, you know, family members' records or cassettes or whatever it might be that, you know, they threw up in storage when they moved out of the house or went to college or whatever. And, you know, you're digging through grandma and grandpa's attic or basement. You're like, oh, my God, what is all this treasure? Like, it's just not going to happen digital for anyone to discover anything like that. We're gonna have to work harder to influence these kids.
Yep. Exactly.
Grammy Awards alone, we got a mission. Well, Chris, did you have any other influences or?
Yes. Before
or
we
you wanted to have there.
Before we go to the lightning round. I'll throw one out there, it's not one singular person, it's a number of people. Again, you know, getting back to the, you know, talking to, about going to stores and whatnot, my local video store, it was called Entertainment Galore, and, you know, the people that worked there, you know, like they were all people that I knew, because I lived in a small community, but, you know, like they... The store and they themselves influenced me in a lot of ways into watching certain movies and checking out certain things. Like, for example, Entertainment Galore was how I was introduced to the Planet of the Apes franchise, because the local store I went to was in Fort Assiniboine, and the main store, because it was just a two-store franchise. The main store was in Barrhead, so the owner, I can't remember his name now, was based out of Barrhead, and then in Fort Assiniboine, it was, you know, people that I knew from the community that worked there. So he went out and bought the complete collection, the complete five-movie collection of the original Planet of the Apes, and, you know, one of the ladies that worked there knew that, you know, I typically rented Star Wars and Star Trek movies and science fiction movies. And she's like, hey, you'll like that. It's really good. It's, you know, called Planet of the Apes. And I was like, you know, like I wasn't sold on it. I'm like, that kind of sounds stupid. You know, I don't want to watch a bunch of monkeys. Right. And she's like, no, trust me. You will like it. I know you'll like it. And you'll come back and you'll get the second one guaranteed. Okay. So I took, and of course, like my mom and dad didn't ruin it for me. I still remember it.
You know? So you knew nothing.
I knew nothing. Nothing. And the videotapes that they had bought, because in the late 90s, they re-released them again. Because I remember because I bought that collection at that time. And then if you bought the five movies, you could send in a mail order thing to get the basically like the behind the scenes documentary.
Oh yeah. I did that in Star Wars.
Yeah. So I did that in the late 90s. But the thing is with the covers on those ones, they ruined the movie. Like on the cover for the first movie, you see Charlton Heston in the sand looking at the Statue of Liberty. Right. So if it was a new person that had never seen it before, then you would know how it ends just by the cover. Whereas these ones back in the early 90s, they it wasn't like that. Like, there was just a picture of Charlton Heston in a cage for the first movie. So I had no idea going into, like, my mom and dad did, because they had, of course, seen it when they were kids.
A huge movie, yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea how it ended. And I remember being completely floored, you know, with the reveal. And I remember, like, turning to my mom, and she just had this big smile on her face because she knew that my mind was blown, me and my sister. And my sister was a little bit younger, because I want to say I was, like, 10 at the time, you know, around that age when I watched it for the first time. So my sister would have been, like, around 7. And I remember her being scared of, like, the gorillas and stuff, because, I mean, they're shooting people.
Yeah.
Like, they're hunting them. You know, like, now it seems kind of tame, but I mean, back in those days, I mean, that was pretty graphic, you know, when they, you know, they showed the humans, like, hanging there, like, you know, pieces of meat, you know, like, it, you know, like the way, you know, a hunter would hang, you know, a deer, you know, like, it was crazy. And I knew nothing about it. And she was right. Her name was Cindy, the lady that worked there. And, yeah. Literally the next day we went back down, and I ended up renting 2, and I ended up renting 3, because we were on summer holidays at the time. So, yeah, I ended up just plowing through them, and then it became like an annual thing. Like, every summer they would bring, because, like I said, this was a two-store franchise, so they would recycle movies. So certain sets they would take back to Barhead, and then certain sets they'd bring, you know, back and forth. So every summer for, I don't know, probably 3 years or so, they would cycle these movies back to the Fort store, and I'd rewatch them again. So yeah, that's my local video store. That is a big influence on me. Like, my mom, like, a lot of times, like, cause people forget, like, back in the day, like, VHS tapes, like, if you were to buy a brand new movie, it was expensive.
It was $100.
Yeah. Like, they were not cheap. Like, not like now it's, you know, I mean, you could still, you know, some Blu-rays can run you, you know, $30 or something, but, you know, that's pretty cheap, you know, compared to back in the day. And I mean, we're talking like 80s, 90s videotape prices. And so entertainment galore would, you know, like when they would get a new movie, like, let's say, like the 1989 Batman movie, they would get like a whole bunch of copies because they would rent them out like crazy. And then eventually the craze would die, and they weren't renting them as much, and then they would sell them. And,
yep.
You know, for my mom, it was a cheap way of buying me, I don't want to say cheap, it was an affordable way to buy me these movies that I really enjoyed at an affordable price. So I remember, you know, Christmas, you know, getting Batman 89, and it was a used copy from Entertainment Galore, because you open it up and all the stickers were still on the videotape, you know, because they'd put, you know, property of Entertainment Galore, and they'd put, you know, this with, you know, Be Kind, Rewind, you know, that sticker would be on there. I remember getting the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie for Christmas. It was a used one from them. I remember Terminator 2, my mom getting that for me, and again, it was an Entertainment Galore copy that she bought. She probably still paid like 20 or 30 bucks for them, but, you know, it was a hell of a lot cheaper than buying it brand new, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, movies back in those days, like, I mean, you didn't have, like, the bargain bins like you have at Walmart now. Back in those days, you know, buying a new VHS tape was expensive, and, you know, this was just a cheap alternative. So yeah, again, Entertainment Galore, that was my local, my local store, and I dearly miss it, because it closed down, I want to say mid-2000s, like, I want to say, like, 2005, 2006, they finally closed the doors on it. And it was sad. It was unfortunate, but anyway, I digress.
No, that's an excellent pick, and I actually, much to my wife's joy, have a ton of VHS in the garage right now.
Mm.
But nearly every one of them has the stickers from where they're from.
Yep.
And it's like history to me. And there's so many movies in there. I'm like, I don't want this movie. I'll never watch this movie. But I feel like I'm getting rid of the last remnants of something if I just toss it, though.
Yep.
You know, and it has the sticker for the original rental place or notes or maybe something written down in there or, you know, like whatever it might be. To take it just from VHS to books, because every library and stuff has their sales and they pull, you know, whether it's donations, and they also pull stuff from their own catalog to get rid of it. That has happened enough times in my hometown. I have books now that are the same ones I took out when I was a kid that have my name scratched in, you know, just learning how to write my own name in the card catalog in the back. Like, I found the exact ones I took out and have it.
Yeah.
But I found ones that, like, family members took out, like my mom and dad and all.
Huh.
And it bothers me so much to see stuff like this that's just thrown out. And I know that's a hoarder, you know, collector mentality.
Yep.
But, you know, that is the stuff that created me. And, you know, stuff created you, stuff created, you know, everyone in this world. You know, this little cult, clique, whatever you want to call it, that we have here, that I worry is going to disappear.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where I'm going to put it all. Has that problem. But, you know, like, your kids are a little older than mine, but I already see stuff. I'm like, why don't you care about this? I care about it.
Yeah.
Like, why can't you put down the thing that you're messing with and care about my stuff?
Yeah. And I totally understand now, because, like, with my dad is not a geek, but he's and the way I describe it, he's a geek in another way. And geek, I think, can be used as a broad term. Geek, I think, can apply to, you know, if you're passionate about something. Like, my dad's a geek on hockey. He's a hockey geek. Like, he loves hockey. He loves watching hockey. He used to play hockey. He, you know, follows stats. He watches documentaries about hockey. His passion for hockey is similar to my passion for Star Trek or my passion for, comic books, right? But my dad, I remember when I was a kid growing up, my dad wanted me so bad to be a hockey geek. You know, he would want me to sit down and watch, you know, the Oilers play. He would, you know, my dad used to make a homemade rink because we lived on an acreage. He would make a hockey rink for us to play on every winter, me and my sister. So I learned a lot, you know, playing, because, you know, my dad would get us outside, you know, shooting the puck around. And I appreciate that. I appreciate, you know, the good times we had playing hockey and all the good memories. But I just, it wasn't my passion. I was not a hockey geek like my dad was. My dad just, he wanted so bad for me to, you know, play hockey and get into hockey and that sort of thing. And it just wasn't my cup of tea. And now being a parent, you know, like I'll use my son for an example. When he was younger, you know, I was really trying to steer him towards, you know, geeky stuff. Like, I remember the one Christmas, that's when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was back on the air, was back on Fox and stuff, and there's a bunch of Ninja Turtle toys. So for that Christmas, I bought him a lot of Ninja Turtle stuff, right, thinking, you know, he'd get into it. But he just didn't. When he was a kid, he was more, like, his fascination was with cars. Like, he loved Hot Wheels, he loved model cars, you know, that sort of thing. And it's funny, because even now, like, now he's 19 years old, he's going to be 20 here right away, he still loves his cars. Like, he just bought a, I want to say it's a Mazda Lancer. It's like a sports car. You know, he's working, he's making his own money. He wanted to, you know, this was the first vehicle he ever bought for himself. So he, you know, he bought the one he loved, right? And that's his passion. That's what he geeks out about. He geeks out about cars. So it kind of makes me sad, you know, from being a, you know, myself, my own personal, thing, wanting him to, you know, I wish he'd, you know, got into Ninja Turtles. I wish he'd got into Star Wars. I wish he'd got into, you know, because I used to take him to Marvel movies when he was younger, and then he just kind of got too old and didn't want to go to them anymore. And, you know, like, he didn't gravitate towards that sort of stuff, right? So, you know, it was kind of sad, but at the same time, I'm happy that he is passionate and he loves the things that he loves. And so, you know, being a father, like, I totally understand where my dad was coming from, you know, wanting me to like the things he liked, but I just didn't. And, yeah, anyway, sorry, went on a tangent again.
No, because I absolutely, you know, I mean, mine's only six, so I'm not there yet, you know, by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But there's already things I'm like, okay, I see this being something you're going to continue with, but this other thing, it's already done.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I can already tell you don't have the interest in it, and we're done.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, there's stuff where I'm like, oh, he hasn't played with these toys in a while, and all of a sudden they're back for a week out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder, and I, actually my wife and I were talking about not only our kid, but, you know, his friends and what we can see already. Like, okay, this kid's probably going to go towards these interests or, you know, this career or sport or whatever it might be. Like, you can already see stuff at that age. And I'm like, oh, geez, probably not a lot of it is going to line up with the stuff I'm into.
Yep.
And, you know, so I try to project and now think of my dad. My dad, you know, he went and saw Star Wars when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll see movies for fun, but he's not going to go and sit down and watch, like, Clone Wars or Rebels or any of that stuff or read the comics.
Yep.
You know, he'll go and see the movie and enjoy the movie, and that's it. He knew what wrestling was. In the height of it, he knew who Hulk Hogan was and Andre the Giant, like most people at that time.
Yep.
But after that, he couldn't care less and never turned it on. He knows who The Rock is, but, you know, that'd be it.
Yeah.
But then he'll call me up and he'll be like, oh, did you watch, you know, the football game? I was like, you have literally known me all my life. What do you think? You know, so I can see... You know, as my kid gets older, I'm sure my dad and I are going to have a lot of conversations of, gee, I would have enjoyed having that thing that we were both into, but I do also appreciate he has this other thing he's into, and now I can learn about that through him.
Yep. Yep. Right on. Did you want to do the lightning round?
Yeah.
Okay, I got a bunch of list off real quick. As we mentioned, Harlan Ellison, definitely a great influence on me. George R. R. Martin, you know, I'm a huge fan of Game of Thrones. I enjoy his writing. But one thing I really appreciate about George R. R. Martin is his world-building abilities. You know, he makes... You know, the world of A Son on Ice and Fire seem like it could have happened. You know, like there's so much thought and ingenuity brought into just his world building. And as a writer, or I should say, as an aspiring writer, I appreciate that. I really admire that. Yeah, so he's been a big influence on me and my writing. Of course, we mentioned, like, Stan Lee, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, Peter David, John Byrne, Jim Lee, all them, comic book greats, Bob Kane and Bill Finger, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. They're like so many comic book influences. And last but not least, Gene Roddenberry and George Lucas, the creators of Star Trek and Star Wars, respectively. Not enough credit, I think, gets given to those guys. Especially with George, everyone at the time kind of shit on the prequels a little bit. Now I think a lot of people are saying to themselves, man, I really wish he'd been more involved in those sequels. He's, again, an amazing world builder. Like, what George did was pretty amazing. Gene Roddenberry, he did create Star Trek, and his influence carried on through Rick Berman right until the end of Enterprise. There was a lot of, unfortunately, with Discovery, I find, and somehow it comes back to Discovery. I don't know why, but it does. With me, they're really not following Gene's rules. They're not following his vision. They're kind of throwing things out the window, which is ironic considering his son is one of the executive producers that they, don't adhere to his strict rules, which, if you've ever seen any of the documentaries, where they have the writers, like I remember when they did the writer's room on the TNG Blu-rays, when Seth MacFarlane hosted that special with the writers, they said at the time, like, they were very frustrated as writers because Gene had all these rules that they were forced to follow, and Rick Berman wouldn't, would once in a blue moon he would bend the rules, but for the most part he held true, and they said at the time, like, it was maddening, because they really felt that they were being, that they weren't being able to tell the stories, the great stories that they could tell. But then in reflection, all these years later, they appreciate it because it made them better writers. Whereas, like, now with Star Trek Discovery, instead of coming up with a realistic, it's still science fiction. But it, there is some science to it as well. Like when they travel through time, for example, when, they describe it, it's a, for example, from yesterday's Enterprise on TNG, when the Enterprise C comes through, they explain it that it's a rip in the, in the space-time continuum. Data explains later in the episode that, this exchange of firepower between the Romulans and the Enterprise C could have been what created this temporal rift. All of this was based on actual theories from physicists, from guys like Stephen Hawking and Arthur C. Clarke and guys like that, like the people that have done their research and know, the technical consultants on TNG read this and they put it into their script, right? Whereas on Discovery, they explain time travel with time crystals. That's it. That's how Michael Burnham can travel through time in that magic spacesuit. It's time crystals. And it's like, that to me, that's more of a Doctor Who explanation of time travel. Like when you just say it's timey-wimey, gobbledygook, yeah. Sure, that works for Doctor Who because that's, what they've done, right? But Star Trek did something different. And now you guys are doing a Doctor Who approach to time travel. Gene Roddenberry's vision and his influence is sorely missed, I think, in a lot of ways. On Discovery. Picard, on the other hand, I got other thoughts for that in the Ender segment. And yeah, that's it for my lightning round.
I would echo many of them, and any I wouldn't echo is only because I haven't, you know, gone down the rabbit hole of them as much as you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not disagreeing. It's just I'm not there.
Yep.
I'm going to add, well, we talked about Wizard magazine earlier, mm-hmm. but I'm going to repeat that. I'll throw in MTV during, I'll say, their golden 90s era of realizing they were also had to be socially responsible
mm-hmm.
in their influence, and had documentaries and news and reports and programs, and like were a guiding hand for a generation until they just threw it all away and, you know, let's just have reality trash and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time when that channel mattered more than any other for an entire generation, I think. And a lot of, you know, I'll realize a lot of thoughts, opinions, or exposures to stuff come from that. And then finally, I'll throw in your network, you know, top of the dial, like 2 through 13 or 20 TV stations that were not playing sports on the weekend and thus had to play nothing but ridiculous movies.
Mm-hmm.
Kung fu, sci-fi, giant monster movies. You know, that's where I found Star Wars and Planet of the Apes and Godzilla and, you know, just all sorts of stuff that some of it, I don't even know what it was, but I'll remember a crazy scene or action or whatever and discover like a new one every year. Oh my God, I saw this when I was a kid. What is this?
Yeah.
I need it again. And, you know, speaking of ridiculous movies, I think for our humor and for the things we enjoy and everything, we also got through when The Simpsons and Mystery Science Theater.
Simpsons, I will definitely agree with. Mystery Science Theater, I don't disagree, but I never actually watched it. That's,
really?
Yeah, like it.
Just one that missed you.
Well, it did move.
Or just not really as big in Canada.
It definitely wasn't big in Canada. What channel was it on in the States? I know
it was on Comedy Central or Comedy Network or whatever okay. It was called at the time. And then it moved to sci-fi.
Yes. I remember when it moved to sci-fi, but I'd never watched it previously, right? So I never, because we didn't get Comedy Central. It's funny. I used to have an American Satellite, but I don't think my parents ever subscribed to it. But, no, I've heard good things, but unfortunately I never did watch that one. But Simpsons, obviously. Like, that was, yeah.
And Simpsons, now, I mean, with Disney Plus, that's one, not only do I want to see the classic ones, but I want to watch newer ones with newer ones with an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know everyone's like, oh, it's not the same. It shouldn't be. It's 30 years later. So it should be different. Watch it for what it is.
Another podcast I listened to, the Comic Conspiracy, they were mentioning recently that I guess like the new season of The Simpsons has actually been really good. Like they're saying that it seems like they brought in some new writers or something, and that it's actually getting like almost back to the way it used to be. Like I know we discussed this before where, you know, they had like all these things, how they all build up to different, you know, all these outcomes on that show.
Yeah.
That they're kind of getting back to that, I guess. But I haven't watched it in years, so I can't say for sure. The most recent episode I watched was the one when they went to Canada. Like when Lisa was like stuck in Canada or something, and Marge and Homer are trying to get her back to the States.
Is that the one where they drove through New York and did the song?
I think so. Because Buffalo is just across the river from Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, if that's the same one, they shoot down the area that I live in pretty hard.
Oh, really? It's the one with Justin Trudeau where he like crawls out the window.
I think it might be.
Okay.
It was like scandalous here. How dare they say stuff? I'm like, then make the area better so they don't have a reason to make fun of it.
Yeah, like, I didn't watch the whole episode. Like, I was just over visiting my brother-in-law, and all of a sudden we seen Justin Trudeau on, because they had it on their TV, but it wasn't, they did, like, the volume was down.
Yeah, it was more background.
Yeah, and then I was like, holy shit, that's Justin Trudeau. Oh, yeah, because I remember reading about it or seeing it on Facebook or something, that they were doing a Canada episode. Because for a while there, they were saying, like, Homer is, like, from Winnipeg or something. I don't know if that's still a thing, or...
I don't know.
Because it was the episode where him and Grandpa Simpson were, like, basically coming up to Canada to get, like, medicine and stuff for old people. And then yeah, but anyway. All right, well, if you're ready, Kev, we can move on to their Ender segment.
Yeah.
All right, let's...
Did anything happen the last couple of weeks, Chris?
A few things have happened. A few things have happened. So I'm going to start it off on a sad note, unfortunately. You know, with this being the Pop Culture Pub. You know, unfortunately, pop culture icons pass away. And sometimes very unexpectedly. And this was one of them that was very unexpected. And that was Kobe Bryant, who was... basketball player. He was for years a Los Angeles Laker. I'm not a basketball person. I do appreciate it a little bit. Like last year, the Raptors were in it, and they actually won the NBA championship, which was it was amazing because they're the only Canadian team we have, right? So pretty much all of Canada was cheering for him. But Kobe Bryant, of course, I know of him. I've seen him on different, doing different interviews and so on and so forth. From what I understand, he was a very nice person. He did a lot of good work, with his celebrity. Unfortunately, he died in a helicopter accident with his daughter. It's really sad because apparently his daughter had, like, she had aspirations to become a basketball player, and she was doing very well. And there was, I think there was 9 people that passed away in that helicopter crash, unfortunately. but he was only 41 years old. And, you know, he was really starting to branch out because he had retired from basketball. But I think he, like, produced or did voice work or something in an animated short. I believe that won an Oscar.
He produced it. And it won best short animated feature or short animated film, whatever the classification is for Oscar. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he was branching out. He was doing different things. And I know, on Monday, Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon, they did very emotional monologues. I think Jimmy Kimmel, he didn't even have a studio audience. He just talked about Kobe in his opening. And then they showed clips of all the years that, Kobe did interviews and so on and so forth. And Jimmy Fallon, it's a very similar thing. Even Ellen on her show, she did a tribute to Kobe. It's sad. It's too bad. He really seemed to, even though his basketball career was over, and he ended up, he left on a high note. It seemed like he was just getting started as far as branching out. And like I said, he did a lot of charity work and did a lot of good things with his celebrity. So, it's a definite shame when we lose one of the good ones. And, thoughts and prayers for him and his family during this time. But anyway...
So I was at home writing an article for another site, and the guy that runs the site, we're messaging back and forth about it.
Yep.
And he said, "Hey, can you change this up and do a different picture?" Yeah, of course. Not a problem. Wasn't asking anything crazy by any means. Just wanted a couple edits.
Yep.
And I was searching something on Twitter completely. I was wondering if a picture that he wanted would have been on Twitter, because that sounded like the easiest way to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And I start seeing the TMZ stuff, which came out first.
Yeah.
I messaged back. I said, let's pause. I'll fix it later. I suggest you go turn on the TV right now, and we'll talk later. And I got a holy shit back from him, and that was the last I heard for like 2 days.
Yeah.
But there, now, I'm not a big basketball person by any means. I can appreciate skill. It's one of those sports I can watch live and get more out of it than seeing it on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey being the number one for that, I think, out of all sports. But Kobe was a name that passed the grandmother test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go to someone's grandma and they're like, oh, I know who that is. Because the older you get, that knowledge of what's current gets smaller and smaller.
Yep.
So for any name to bust forth to pass the test means that's a huge name.
Yep.
Now, people then brought up, oh, there's this about him. There's this thing he did. There's this thing he did. You know, no one ever said he was perfect. They said a person who was one of the greatest in the game he played, undeniable,
mm-hmm.
died tragically with his daughter. If you want to argue whether he did or did not do other things, that's besides the point right now. Also, from everything I've read and seen about him over the last few days, he was also someone that never stopped learning and trying to be better. So anytime he failed, he was like, you know, I'm sorry. Let me never do that again, and let me be a better person.
Mm-hmm.
Which says a lot for anyone. I definitely got messed up and worked up when Stan Lee died.
Mm-hmm.
Really hurt me, affected me. Like, I was just sitting at home, and I was like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm not, and I can't explain it. Like, I never met him. I don't, you know, I never talk to him, nothing, but like, this hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, and I know it shouldn't, because he's just some guy. So I can certainly understand why so many people are upset about it. That's your world, that's your thing you're a fan of. I'm not going to make fun of anyone for being upset over a celebrity they never met dying. And I don't expect anyone to have been mad at me for Stan Lee.
Yeah,
you know, it's equal in that way. But the thing that got me, and I'll just soapbox a little here. Yes, 9 people died, and that's upsetting and sad
mm-hmm.
for their family and friends and everything.
Yeah,
but you've been on Twitter and Facebook and all too. Kobe died, and someone inevitably other people died too. You know, yes, they did. And that's sad, but are any of those other people considered to be in the top 5 or 10 greatest in their field?
Mm-hmm. Well,
and have and known worldwide by millions, if not billions, of people? No, they're not.
Yeah.
So let anyone that those other people met and influenced and affected their lives mourn them. It just turns out that one of the guys on there affected millions of people. So millions of people are going to be upset. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry the other ones affected, you know, tens or dozens or hundreds of people. They still did, and those people can be upset, rightfully so, and I feel bad for them.
Yeah.
But one affected millions, and so millions are going to mourn. You don't need to be all... It's just being internet contrary, because so many people are, just to put their voices out there.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, he did a lot of good work, a lot of good charity. I mean, they were flying to one of his basketball camps. Like, he was teaching kids how to play basketball. And, yeah, like, I mean, he's right up there with the likes of Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Shaquille O'Neal. You know, like he was one of the greats. He was. And, yeah, there's... everyone's got to put a negative spin on it, you know? Like, I don't know, that's what one of the shitty things about the internet. I don't want to shit on the internet too much, because I mean, we are a podcast that's based on the internet. We both blog, but I mean, especially in social media, like, there's so much toxic fandom.
There's just times where I'm like, I would really just not. My life would be better and easier right now if I didn't see your shitty opinion.
Well, and
not you, Chris, obviously, yeah, but you know.
I understand what you're saying. And that's why, like, a lot of people don't even go on social media. Like, I know a lot of people that don't go on social media just because of that.
Yeah, I'm trying to do more positive things and see if I can trick the algorithm so I only see positive things.
Okay, we'll
see if that works.
Well, speaking of positive, I'll use that as a quick segue into our next one.
Is it positive? I've been wondering.
It is positive. It is positive. And you would think it wouldn't be. Like, given, you know, pretty much every episode that we record, in some way or another, I always talk about how I don't like Star Trek Discovery.
I do.
So, like, even this episode, I managed to shoehorn that in. And I don't intend to. It's not like I write it down on my notes, like, I gotta bash Discovery. But somehow it just comes up, and it's because I love Star Trek so much. It just pains me to see what it's come to, right? That being said, you know, even though it's the same, a lot of the same creative team behind Discovery, I was pleasantly happy with Star Trek Picard. I really, really liked it.
I know you can explain, but just before you watch the second of it, were you going in with high hopes, low hopes, no expectations? Where were you going into it?
I was going with high hopes, because I am an optimist at heart. You know, I am a glass is half full kind of guy. Like, that's just the way I am. And I mean, you can ask, you know, anyone who knows me, like, if I could be having the shittiest day and, you know, people come up, like, if you came up to me, Kevin, said, hey, Chris, how's it going? I'd say, oh, just fine. You know, like, that's just the way I am, right?
Yeah.
So for Star Trek Picard, you know, like we'd mentioned in previous episodes, I was optimistic because of Patrick Stewart's involvement in this. Like, he is an executive producer on this show, and the fact that he's in his 70s, in his late 70s, and he really doesn't have anything to prove anymore. He doesn't need to do this show. So the fact that they were able to convince him to come back and be willing to do this, and it is apparently, you know, a second season has been greenlit, you know, to me, I really don't think Patrick Stewart would come back for something mediocre. Like, it would have to be something that he really believed in and enjoyed. And I thought it was great. You know, like a lot of the negative things that people are shitting on about this show, I don't really agree with. So I've shared this on social media, and I'm just bringing up I took a picture of it. Somebody on the internet, like, when Star Trek Discovery came out, they came up with this Star Trek Discovery hater bingo, and basically it's like a bingo card, like the game bingo, and then it, with a bunch of different things that, you know, you could presumably put a dauber on, and if you get enough, like if you get a line or four corners or whatever, like the game bingo, then that means you hate it, right? And pretty much everything on that bingo card, you know, I hated, you know. So
you played the cover all around.
Yeah. So yeah, I got what they call in bingo. I believe it's called a blackout. Like when you get the whole card.
Blackout. Okay.
So, you know, in, cause my mom's a big bingo. My mom is what you would call a bingo holic. She goes to bingo like two or three times a week. So that would be like the bingo card that wins the big prize, right? And so I won the big prize, I guess, in hating Star Trek Discovery. But they did one for Star Trek Picard. And, like, most of these I don't agree with. Gene's vision, you know, like, this did steer away from Gene's vision, but it didn't at the same time. Data looks too old. Well, yeah, he did look a little bit older. I mean, Brent Spiner is an older guy. The lens flares thing, I didn't really, honestly, the lens flares did not bother me. Like, I honestly didn't really notice them, to be honest with you. Like, on Star Trek Discovery, I noticed them. Like, they stick out like a sore thumb. For this one, I didn't notice it. But sorry, Kev, I interrupted you.
No. All right. Lens flare, just because it'll be quicker. There's a difference between lens flare, like, ooh, doesn't this look cool and pretty on camera, and a lens flare of, like, well, this would actually make sense for the shot or the location, because that's just how it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the a difference right away, is like, well, yeah, there should be one here because of where they are or what's happening that would affect it, as opposed to just, like, I just want one here because it looks pretty. Data looking old, well, one, dream, so...
Yeah, exactly.
However, and two, not data in the drawer there, which we were wrong about what it was, but...
Yeah, so it turns out it was B4.
Even if you want to go with... Well, it's a... With the synthetic, is that the right word?
Yeah, they call them Sims or whatever. Yeah.
It's still a material that could age, let's say, much like anything. Look at them finding, you know, like puppets and props and stuff in storage, and they're falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this thing would look, quote, older, and yes, because Brett Spiner's older, but, you know... There's an easy explanation for why something would look older than it did when the series ended.
Well, yeah, and
like, that's such a nitpick for no reason.
Yeah, and I mean, they did put the groundwork in, like, the season 6 episode of TNG, Birthright Part 1. Like, that's when Dr. Bashir was on TNG for that episode, and he was amazed because Data breathes, Data has a pulse, like, and, you know, in that episode, Data unlocked the ability to dream. So they, like, because they said the reason, and I remember being at a Star Trek convention when I think it was Eric Stillwell was there, who was on the writing staff of TNG, and he said the reason they did that was because they knew Brent Spiner is aging and he's not going to stay the same, right? So this way they have an out, like, you know, like, when Data starts looking older, they can say, well, that's part of his programming, you know, like, he was his you know, Dr. Soon made him so that he would age, right? He would look older. Or if Brent Spiner put on some weight, you know, that's why Data's got a belly now, you know, that sort of thing. It was a backdoor way of explaining why he would look different. And it was brilliant, you know. It absolutely makes sense if Dr. Soon is, you know, if he's working towards creating this realistic synthetic person, that he would do those things. But yeah, no, you know, and one of the big complaints was, you know, the look of the show. You know, it didn't feel like Next Generation. Well, it's not supposed to feel like Next Generation. This isn't the Enterprise. This isn't him going, you know. You didn't get the opening credits where, you know, to boldly go where no man's gone before. These are the voyages of the USS Enterprise. This is about him in retirement. He's retired. He's on Earth. You know, some, you know, visually, it was fascinating to see. You know, like, seeing, you know, Outer Boston or whatever they called it. Seeing, you know, Paris in the future. Seeing San Francisco. Or in Japan, Okinawa, or whatever. Like, we didn't, on TNG, you know, there was only a handful of episodes that actually took place on Earth. You know, there was, you know, the one, First Duty, or no, yeah, the First Duty, when they were at Starfleet Academy, There was, you know, the conspiracy episode in season one. They were just inside Starfleet headquarters. You know, we saw, we barely saw Earth at all on TNG. Deep Space Nine, we only saw Starfleet headquarters on an episode. We saw, Benjamin Sisko was in New Orleans, you know, we saw the old quarter, which, you know, they purposely left, you know, because, it's New Orleans, it's an older city. They let, you know, it would make sense that there wouldn't be a lot of new technologies there. You know, and I mean, at the time it was a necessity given, you know, their TV budgets, what they could film at the time, you know, how costly special effects were. They just didn't show the future Earth. Whereas now, all these years later, they can show, you know, what it would be like on, you know, if you're in Boston, for example, there would be, you know, shuttles and hover cars flying around. There would be, you know, if the Starfleet news or Federation news service is doing an interview with Picard, that you would see, you know, him up on a wall somewhere, right? Like, to me, I really thought they did a good job showing what the future Earth is like, you know, and to me it made sense. You know, the choices that they made, you know, the story, I liked, you know, all the detail they put into this. Unlike Discovery, where there's a lot of continuity issues, there's a lot of them not paying homage to what took place before. In this show, there's more. Well, not more of the negative, but more of the positive. Like, they're showing, are paying homage to the shows that came before. They're paying homage to the continuity. You know, there's so many Easter eggs in this episode. Like, when they talked about Bruce Maddox, you know, that was a character we were introduced to in season two of TNG in Measure of a Man. We know that Data kept in contact with Commander Maddox because in the fourth season episode, Data's Day, that was like him keeping that log entry, because it was like a log episode where Data's talking to the viewers. He's talking to Commander Maddox, like he's recording that and sending it to him. So it makes sense that at some point, you know, this character, who we only met once back in 1988, would be, you know, continuing the work of Data's creator, that he would possibly make, you know, these daughters that Data envisioned, and that Data probably had a hand in helping him prior to his death. You know, like, he was probably sending him information and they were dialoguing back and forth and so on and so forth. So it definitely wasn't a stretch of the imagination. And I love that, you know, this feels like a lived-in universe. Like, it, to me, it made sense. You know, like Picard quitting Starfleet. I mean, Picard has turned his back on Starfleet a number of times during TNG and the movies. You know, like there was Star Trek Nemesis, you know, where he basically resigned his commission to help the Baku. You know, like, it's not unprecedented what happened. And to me, it felt real, very realistic, and true to the Picard character, that, you know, if Starfleet did back down and didn't, you know, want to help the Romulans, that Picard would say, you know, well, I quit. I'm out of here. If you're going to let these people die, I'm not having any part of it. It totally makes sense for his character. You know, I love the backstory. I love how they tied it into what we saw in the 2009 J.J. Abrams film, with the supernova that took out the Romulans. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, there would be lasting repercussions, that it would affect the Romulans in a very profound way. And again, like, it's true to the characters. Like, I loved, you know, that, like, the Romulans were very xenophobic, so, you know, most of their infrastructure was based out of their solar system, because they didn't want to spread themselves out. Like, they kept most of their eggs in one basket, so to speak, in their home solar system. So it makes sense if their sun went supernova that it would affect them greatly, like it would decimate them. And in the little Easter eggs that they threw in there that even I didn't necessarily catch, like at the end of the episode when that Romulan comes walking in and talks to the twin sister, and I'm like, clearly this is the bad guy of the show because they're playing the Romulan theme, which was fucking awesome that they repurposed it. And it was like, oh my god, you know, it's like I know this. I later found out it was the Romulan theme from the original series episode Balance of Terror, like when they were first introduced to Star Trek. That was the theme music that they, you know, composed. And it was awesome that they brought it back in a modern fashion. And as soon as that guy walked in, it's like, okay, that's the bad guy. That is who we're going to be fighting this season, guaranteed. You know, and then the reveal of the Borg, and it was just fantastic. I was very happy. I loved all the tie-ins with Star Trek First Contact. I loved the tie-ins with Nemesis. And I did get into a little Facebook back and forth with this idiot that I unfortunately know from going to the Vulcan convention every year. Because on that bingo card that I mentioned, because that's how I got into this back and forth with him, because on the bingo card it says it's that the show is set in the Kelvin timeline. I just want to throw this out there. This is not the Kelvin timeline. And for people who don't know what I'm talking about, in the 2009 Star Trek film, when Spock goes back in time and Nero go back in time in that film, they create a new timeline. Which is why the Enterprise looks different in that movie, which is why Kirk, you know, wasn't a Starfleet graduate. He was, you know, he was just a guy that, you know, couldn't make it in the Academy, and he, you know, eventually joined it because Captain Pike convinced him. You know, like that whole timeline, that new timeline that was created refers to the USS Kelvin, which was the ship that Nero destroyed that had Captain Kirk's dad on it. That was the USS Kelvin. So that's that new timeline that was created, that's the Kelvin timeline. The Prime timeline refers to the Star Trek, the original series, TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise. That is, and the 10 films that took place before the 2009 film, that is all Prime Universe Star Trek. They say Star Trek Discovery is Prime. I shoehorn it into the Kelvin timeline because it doesn't make any sense what they're doing. But this show is considered Prime timeline. It is not Kelvin timeline. And this guy that I was got into it back and forth, he kept saying, no, it's the Kelvin timeline. I'm like, no, it's not. And I even found an interview that Alex Kurtzman did for Newsweek. It was on their website. And I, even when I took a screenshot and shared it, and he says in the interview, it takes place in the Prime Star Trek timeline. This is not the Kelvin timeline. The guy still didn't believe me. So whatever. But I just want to throw this out there for the listeners. This is the Prime Universe. This takes place in the same universe as the Next Generation. So this is the same Captain Picard that we saw for 7 seasons and for 4 movies. This is the same Picard. It is not the alternate universe Picard from that would have been created in the, you know, as a result of what happened in the 2009 film. And I think where he was getting confused is because the 2009 film, that's where we saw the Romulan supernova, right? But that was in the Prime Universe. That wasn't in the Kelvin timeline. And it's not to say that the Romulan, you know, star-going supernova won't happen in the Kelvin timeline. It probably still will happen in that timeline, but it hasn't happened in that timeline yet. Like, they, you know, like, because the last time we saw the Kelvin timeline was Star Trek Beyond? Is that the third J.J. movie?
J.J. Star Trek Into Darkness Beyond.
Yeah, so that was the last of the So anyway, and I, for the viewer or the listeners, I do intend to do a Star Trek Picard episode, but we'll probably do it at the end of the season after we've watched all the episodes and we can reflect. And but I'm assuming you watched it, Kev?
I did, just for you.
Excellent. And what did you think as a fan who's not as ingrained in it as I am? What did you think?
I was trying to think a way to put it, like you're saying, because so much was on Earth, and like Blade Runner-y. I wanted to say Bourne Identity, and I don't know why. I'm guessing because of the European locations and stuff.
Well, but, and her kick-ass abilities, definitely.
Yeah.
Bourne vibe there.
Yeah, because it was just. It was so weird to see such a grounded in reality future mystery in Star Trek. And grounded reality on Earth, I mean.
Yep.
And, you know, we said before how, you know, like I was saying, the most recent Star Wars trilogy was like deconstruction Star Wars. This seems like a deconstruction track of strip everything down. It's just, I mean, I'm very much simplifying, but strip everything away. It's just a guy. It's just a regular guy on Earth trying to deal with this situation he's been put in. I'll say, but that made sense though. And that's not Star Trek. You know, I mean, Star Trek, there's always the greater point to it, the greater story, the, you know, what humanity can do as a whole. But it's always been a fantastic space show, too, though.
Yep.
So it's so weird to have this, you know, I don't know. It's not even back to basics. That's not even what Star Trek was. Like, it's thrown me. For, you know, I thought I knew what Star Trek was, and this is not it, but it is good. Mm-hmm. So please show me how you're going to do this.
Well,
I was very surprised and entertained, and I had to watch a video on YouTube to, you know, catch some stuff. I'm like, okay, that's who that person is. That's who, okay, that's the reference they're going for here.
Yeah. No, it's, and I think that is jarring for some people. Like, for me, I didn't mind it because, like I said, like with the original, you know, TNG, original Star Trek, you know, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, like they really did avoid Earth. And when you did see Earth, they were usually in buildings. Like that, you never actually got to like walk the streets of, say, for example, Boston. You didn't get to see Boston.
Yeah.
And it was kind of cool to see, like, you know, the Ferengi symbol, you know, on a billboard in Boston. It's like, okay, the Ferengi are there. Apparently, you know, they're doing something on Earth. But, you know, like back when they did those, you know, those original shows, you know, they were on a very tight budget. You know, special effects weren't what they are now. Like now people can make movie quality films on their phone, and people do, you know, like it's amazing what people can do now. Like for example, like that fan film, that Darth Maul fan film, that's amazing. Like that should, like that, you know, I forget how long it is, like 25 minutes or whatever. It's so good. It's so awesome. They did such an amazing job. You know, 30 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to do that, but now you can. You know, we live in a world where some people's cosplay is better than what the movies are doing. A la, you know, Apocalypse, like, you know, like there, I remember, I think I shared it where there was the side by side between the movie Apocalypse and then like some guy at a Comic-Con, and his costume was so much better. So, but you know, now they can't, you know, I kind of went off a tangent, but now they can show, you know, what the streets of the Federation you know, a Federation City would look like. Like, it's amazing. Because, yeah, like, a lot of times, like, back in TNG, a lot of those exterior shots were just matte paintings that people did. And then they would just superimpose. You could see people walking, right, from a distance. But they never, you'd never see it on street level. So I love that they're able to do that now. And, you know, it's just, I understand it could be jarring for some people, but for me, it worked. It really did. And I love that the, you know, like, they don't shy away from, like, Picard. Like, you know, like, he's an older guy. Like, when they're running up the stairs and he's, like, running out of gas, it's like,
yeah,
you know, he is almost 80 years old. Like, that would be a hard run to run upstairs. It's hard for me, and I'm not even 40 yet. But I love the realism. You know, like, they acknowledge that, you know, time has passed and he's an older guy. But yeah, I will be sticking with it. I'm very happy with what I'm seeing with the show.
Now, you were saying before that Patrick Stewart must have seen something in the project to get him to come back for it.
Yep.
Do you feel there's a social message? I mean, there isn't much of Trek. Do you feel there's a social message they're going for in the season of immigration, acceptance, equal rights,
I
borders even?
Yeah, well, I definitely think there is. Like, you know, I think that's what the Romulans are representing. You know, like, in our...
Well, even the I forgot the name already, the Synthoid or the whatever.
Sims,
yeah. Even them, too, I think it's going to be a factor there.
Yep, and, but the main one for me would be the Romulans, the fact that, like, that news reporter or whatever... You know, basically, like, there's, you could tell there's a sentiment that people don't like the Romulans. And, you know, they think it was a waste of time and money to try and save them, you know. And to be fair, you know, the Romulans, you know, were not a good race, you know.
Yeah.
Like, not a race, that's a bad way of saying it. The Romulan Empire was not a good empire. Like, they did a lot of terrible things. They killed a lot of people. So it totally makes sense there would be this, you know, sentiment of mistrust. There'd be this, you know, sentiment of, you know, hate. And, like, going back to the unification departure, I mean, there was mistrust on Romulus. Like, people didn't, like, the Romulan people didn't even trust one another. So it totally makes sense. I mean, to me, it's... an allegory of, you know, our current day refugee situation. You know, we're bringing in refugees, and then you got, you know, a certain president, you know, associating them with terrorists. You know, it's kind of the same thing, right? And that's what Star Trek excels at, and I love that they're kind of going there with this. You know, like, you can tell real-world stories in the guise of, well, this is science fiction. This is the future.
Yeah.
You know, like...
That's one of the things the original did best.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, like, people didn't think twice that, you know, they essentially did a Vietnam episode of the original series, but because it was on an alien planet with people with white hair, you didn't think anything of it. Or, you know, their most famous episode of racism. He's black on one side and white on the other. Like, something is something so stupid, but yet it's kind of true. Like, you know, why would you judge a person on the color of their skin? And that's, you know, where Star Trek was always great and excelled at. And I think, you know, they're keeping up with it with this show anyway. But yeah, anyway, we'll definitely be talking more about it as, new episodes come out, and we'll definitely do an episode where we talk specifically about it. So I got one more thing on Enders that I wanted to share real quick. I recently went to my local Space and Science Center. It's called the TELUS World of Science in Edmonton. And right now they have an exhibit called the Marvel Universe exhibit. So I went there. It's done, I believe, February 17th, and it's been on since October. So this is an exhibit that's making its rounds. When I shared one of my posts, because I took a bunch of pictures. So if you want to check out the pictures I took, you can check them out on my blog. It's at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. And there's a bunch on my social media. So anyway, I'll just read you the quick overview. Marvel Universe of Superheroes features more than 300 artifacts, including some of Marvel's most iconic and sought-after pages, costumes, and props. Spectacular artifacts to thrill both avid collectors and casual fans, while immersive set pieces, soundscapes, and interactive elements bring the comic book world to life. The exhibition debuts during Marvel's 80th anniversary year and 10th anniversary of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and chronicles the story of Marvel and its influence on visual culture, while also covering the narratives of individual characters such as Captain Marvel, Spider-Man, Black Panther, and Doctor Strange. Some of the exhibition highlights include interactive elements, including the opportunity to travel through the mysterious mirror dimension of Doctor Strange, digitally transform into Iron Man, and pose for selfies alongside life-size representations of Black Panther, Spider-Man, and other iconic Marvel characters. A fully immersive design with real-life-size scenes straight from the comic book world, rare hand-drawn images of iconic heroes such as Spider-Man, Black Panther, blah, 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 concept sketches of props and costumes celebrating the 10th anniversary of Marvel Studios. So yeah, like the highlights for me is the original artwork. Like, they literally have original pages from some of the most iconic comic books ever made. Of course, framed and everything. But I actually got to see a real Jack Kirby page that he drew, and to me that was mind blowing. To see that. And being a comic book fan, it's funny, like going through the exhibit. So they have one wall dedicated to Stan Lee. They have a wall dedicated to Flo Steinberg. They have a wall, of course, for Steve Ditko, and then one for Jack Kirby. So they had a drawing board there, right, with Jack's, some original artwork attached to it with Jack's picture and so on and so forth. It's funny, people are just looking at the pictures and stuff. I was looking at the drawing board. I'm like trying to figure out, is this really Jack's drawing board? Because I've heard so many stories about his drawing board. Unfortunately, it wasn't. It was just a recreation. But being the big big comic book nerd that I am, I was like, oh my god, is this where Jack Kirby drew his comics? But it wasn't. But yeah, like the original artwork, that was what really. My biggest thrill was seeing all the different pages. Like, I mean, they have John Byrne originals. They had Todd McFarlane, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko. I think they even had some Liefeld pages there. They had Jim Lee pages. It was absolutely amazing. And then, yeah, of course, they had real, costumes and stuff from the movies and stuff. And I've heard people say this, and I've never actually realized it, but I didn't realize Chris Evans is as small as he is. Because I got to see his Captain America costume. And it's like, wow, he's really not that big. Realistically, he's not that big, but...
No, some good camera tricks.
Yeah. And same with Scarlett Johansson, because they had her Black Widow costume there, and it's like, wow, she's actually kind of tiny. Like, she's, I mean, not that she's ripped or anything in the movies, but I mean, I don't know, like, when you watch a movie, you don't gauge a person's height, like, it's crazy. I guess that's why Tom Cruise gets away with being as short as he is, but yet he's always going nose to nose, eye to eye against his, the guys that are like 6'4" in real life. But yeah, apparently this exhibit's making its rounds. I believe Eric said that it's going to be near him coming soon. And I know it does travel around. So if any of the listeners have a chance to check out this Marvel Universe exhibit, I highly suggest checking it out. It's so good. It's so amazing. I'm seriously thinking about going back one more time before I go, or before it goes. I mean, just because I think I missed some things. I don't think I took in everything. And I'd really like to go with somebody so they could take pictures of me. Because yeah, there's like they have like a life-size Spider-Man hanging down from the ceiling that you could do I guess I could have done a selfie, but that you could stand beside and it looks like you're standing beside Spider-Man. There's one corner where there's the Thing. He's sleeping on a bench, and you can like sit beside him and he looks real. Like it looks like a very realistic rendition of the Thing. His size and everything, what he would really be like in real life. And, you know, and you look out the window that he's sitting beside and you see the Marvel, you know, version of New York City. Like, it's absolutely amazing. And then, yeah, seeing, you know, all the different creators get, you know, like their walls and so on. And seeing all the, like I said, the movie props and the costumes. And they had stuff from the Netflix series. Yeah, there's so many cool things. I highly recommend checking it out.
Cool. I was thoroughly enjoying all the pictures you're sharing of it.
Yeah, and like I said, if anyone wants to check it out, go to randomnerdness.blogspot.com. So Kev, did you have anything for Enders you wanted to throw out there?
No, the only one I set out this week, I made sure to watch Picard before we recorded.
Excellent. I appreciate that, man. That's awesome. All right, well, before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
You can find me across all social media platforms at Mask Library, and my blog is masklibrary.com. It also has a extra page there, so you can find links to works I do on other sites, much like my work here at the Pop Culture Pub.
Excellent. And like I said, go to randomnerdist.blogspot.com. You can check out my pictures from the Marvel exhibit. You can see some of my blog posts, and links to my various social medias. So I just wanted to thank Kevin for not only hosting tonight but coming up with tonight's topic. It was definitely a good one. And for February, because we're only going to be doing approximately two episodes in February, I might do a third episode because I have been in talks with Larry Nemechek. He's a writer and a producer. He does the Trekland social media. He was the author of the Star Trek, The Next Generation Companion books. I've done interviews with him before. I'm trying to work out an interview with him again, where he's going to talk about some of his Star Trek projects. So that might be the third episode of February, if I can swing that. But for February, I got a two-part episode that we're going to be doing. The first part is going to be top positive OMG moments in pop culture. So this is, we're going to be talking about the stuff that was like mind blowing at the time in a good way. For example, like tonight I talked about, you know, the reveal of the Statue of Liberty at the end of the original Planet of the Apes. That was a positive OMG moment for me. And then the second part of that episode is the top negative OMG moments in pop culture, where I'm sure I'm going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery. So, those will be our episodes in February 2020. So, on behalf of myself and Kevin Decent, who is our host this evening, thank you, Kevin.
No problem.
I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This was our Geek Influences episode, and we will see you again in the not too distant future.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.